Good morning, everyone. The Ways and Means meeting will come to order. The clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. We have the minutes of the last meeting before us. The minutes of May 16th, Representative Carlson moves approval of the minutes of the May 16th meeting. Any questions, concerns, amendments, or discussions on those minutes? See none. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Members, here's kind of the plan for the day. We're going to take up an amendment to the budget resolution now. Amendment is to increase the size of the budget resolution spending to accommodate a somewhat larger bonding bill. We're then going to recess while the Capital Investment Committee takes up the bonding bill. After the Capital Investment Committee is done, I would estimate at 1 o'clock we will call the next meeting for. We will come back here to do the capital investment bill. With that, members, I'm going to move the A4 amendment to the budget resolution. And what the A4 amendment does is that it increases the amount of cash that we can spend in the bonding bill up to $11,500,000. That number may be familiar to people because it's the amount of the Lewis and Clark project. And it also increases debt service by $3,135,000, which is enough to accommodate an $800 million bonding bill. So instead of a $600 million one, we'd have an $800 million one, plus we would have the Lewis and Clark project. And so, members, that is my amendment. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. I have an amendment to the amendment. I was waiting until you were done, so.
Yep, why don't you offer that now, sir?
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the A8 amendment. And, Mr. Chairman, as you know, in past meetings, I've expressed concern about the size of the bonding bill, especially when it was at $600 million. I was hopeful that the size of that bonding bill would increase, and you've moved in the right direction, but in my view, you're not there yet. And so what the number that I have is based upon is the governor's bill for general obligation bonds, and that would be a cost of $8.172 million for this biennium. And that would bring us to the governor's level. And I think that provides an advantage for you. I suspect that being that you don't need the extra large majority to pass the bill out of capital investment or this committee, you do need 81 votes on the House floor. And if this amendment were to pass, that would give you some flexibility if some other number were negotiated once this bill is out on the House floor. So, Mr. Chairman, I think it would provide two advantages, more needed projects, and secondly, give you some flexibility or the author of the bill when the bill is out on the House floor, should you need to go above the $800 million if it doesn't appear that that number would generate the 81 votes. So, Mr. Chairman, I think there would probably be more smiling faces in the audience if this amendment were to pass because they could see some potential in the future if they didn't quite make it into the bill that the majority is coming forward with later this afternoon. So that's the amendment.
All right. Well, thank you, Representative Carlson. And I'm sure it won't surprise you for me to say that I would oppose your amendment to the amendment and ask people to vote against it. I guess, you know, as we've discussed before, I really think the governor's bill is much too large. The standard guideline by which we have set the limit on how big bonding bills are in this body, which is in the debt capacity report prepared by the governor, has for this year shown a bonding bill with geo bonding of $968 million as the capacity based on the way we've measured it for years. Now, this last year, the governor and the administration said, well, we're going to adopt a different way of doing the amortization on measuring what the capacity is, and they came up with a much larger capacity of no less than $3.2 billion. But anyone who I think has been involved in discussions about bonding and discussions about debt, in my view, would find that number just amazingly high, and I think that the governor's number is amazingly high too. You know, we are, the bonding debt service is the fastest growing major spending area of state government. We're spending something like $1.5 billion a biennium on debt service right now, that if we didn't have all this debt, could be going towards education, it could be going to tax relief, could be going to any number of state needs. And I think that we have just gotten into the habit of borrowing too much money. There are certainly worthy projects out there, but with all due respect, I'd ask that we stay with the A4 amendment and reject the A8 Carlson amendment. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, nobody's put on the table the $3.2 billion, nothing even reasonably close to that. Just to reiterate, the point I was making earlier was flexibility. I said this would give you an opportunity to be more flexible without having to reconvene the committee to change the budget target. You know, theoretically, you could go to any number then up to the 1.321. That's my argument, is that you could include additional projects if need be to ultimately pass a bill. If the negotiations were to lead to a billion-dollar bill, you'd have the flexibility. If they went all the way to the governor's recommendation of the 1.3, you'd have that flexibility. I'm arguing for flexibility. I did have two other amendments with other targets, but I chose this one because it gives you and the author and the negotiators more flexibility than the other two amendments that I literally have in my vest pocket. So that's my case.
Okay. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I have to say I'm feeling a little grouchy this morning because nothing from my city is in this bill, nothing. And I think it's really easy to argue that we should spend less when you get what you want for your community in the bill. So I just want to put that out there, because I do note on this spreadsheet that St. Cloud State skipped the line and got its project in this bill, whereas Rochester Community and Technical College, which was higher ranked, is not in the bill. So, you know, this is just, it all depends on whose ox is being gored, I think.
Well, Representative Liebling, I would tell you that there are actually quite a number of St. Cloud projects that are not in this bill. And, you know, there's several I would have liked to have seen in the bill. I guess I don't know the particular merits of the Rochester project, but I know that underneath both caucuses it's not been uncommon to alter the ranking that Minsky comes out with in deciding which projects to do. And so I, you know, have other projects that I would have liked that aren't in the bill too. Other discussion? All right, all in favor of the Carlson A8 amendment to the amendment, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Nay.
No.
Nay. The motion does not prevail. The A8 amendment to the amendment is not adopted. Now we have the A4 amendment to adjust the budget resolution before us. Is there any other discussion on that amendment? See no discussion. All in favor of the A4 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. The A4 amendment is adopted. Members, does anyone have any other questions for me on our order of business today? Otherwise, I'm going to recess us till 1 o'clock. We will meet in this room at 1 o'clock. Or call the chair if the bonding committee, for example, would run later or there'd be something else. We would put something out on the internet. Members, we are in recess to the call of the chair. Good afternoon, everyone. At this point, we'll reconvene the meeting that we had recessed earlier this morning. Our subject today is House File 622. the bonding bill. We understand that Representative Chair Torkelson had a hearing on the bonding bill in his committee a few hours ago, and that the bill that is about to be presented today was passed out of his committee in order to expedite the process. What we're going to do is take up that same bill here. Chair Torkelson moves that House File 622 be referred to the General Register, and there is a delete all amendment, which is the A16-1229 amendment. Chair Torkelson moves the A16-1229 amendment, but on line one, there's a technical change to be made. It should say House File Number 622, the first engrossment. So, Chair Torkelson makes that amendment, and I will recognize Chair Torkelson to explain, I guess, the bill. Or Chair Torkelson, would you want to just explain the amendment, or should just maybe should just adopt it, and then we can explain the bill?
That'd be fine, Mr. Chair, if we can adopt the amendment.
Okay, members, if we could, let's just adopt the A16-1229 amendment with that technical change so we can get the bill in the order it needs to be in so we can discuss it. All in favor of the delete all amendment with the technical change being added on to House File 622, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted.
Nope.
Chair Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the long-awaited bonding bill, fresh out of the Capital Investment Committee that met just a couple of hours ago. We had a good meeting there, reviewed the bill fairly extensively, and I think to start out today's presentation, I would like to have fiscal staff step us through the spreadsheet that you have in your packets.
Mr. Lee, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Andrew Lee from House Fiscal Staff. If you turn to the spreadsheet that is entitled 2016 Capital Budget House Capital Investment Committee, that should be in your packet. A few notes on the formatting of this sheet. This is listed by agency, in many cases alphabetically, but not in all. On the right-hand side is the name of the project. If a project appears on the reading...
Oh, excuse me, Representative Torkelson?
I think we're working from this list.
Yeah.
But I do have a question. We often have information that accompanies projects like this that would give their ranking, let's say, for the University of Minnesota or Minsky, just to use a couple of examples, you know, where they've ranked the different projects, you know, what their number one, two, three is. And I haven't seen that. I sat in for the Capital Investment Committee, at least part of it today. I didn't, if there was that such a document, I didn't see it there. And I don't suppose you have it here either.
I guess I don't know, Chair Torkelson, if you can respond to that. Otherwise, perhaps if you have some individual questions on a project, maybe you could ask them, Representative
Chair, Carlson. If it was available, I would appreciate it. If it's not available, I guess we'll have to request that it become available, perhaps as one of the handouts on the House floor. But with this particular bill and the size of it and the way projects seem to be bouncing around in terms of which ones were selected and which ones were not, it would be important, interesting, both, I guess, to have an idea how these projects were ranked by the various agencies.
Okay. Representative Torkelson, any comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Carlson, we will make sure that information is available. I apologize for the oversight. Being new to this process, I didn't realize that had been practiced in the past, but we will make sure that information is available to committee members. We do not have it available right now. Things have been moving rather quickly.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm not going to say it was hard and fast, but it is a rather unique bill before us. That's why I raised the question, but thank you.
Chair Torkelson.
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and members, so starting on page one, the University of Minnesota, there's two appropriations here. The first is for $38 million in asset preservation, or HEPR. The second is $27.167 million for the Chemical Sciences and Advanced Materials Building and the Duluth campus. And moving on to the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, $35.5 million in general obligation bonds for HEPR. And then Minnesota State CTC in Fergus Falls, $978,000. Minnesota State CTC in Wadena, $820,000. Northland CTC, East Grand Forks, $826,000. Riverland CT, Community College in Albert Lee for Transportation Industrial Education Center, $7,427,000. And then South Central College in North Mankato, $8.6 million, and St. Cloud State University, $18.572 million, with the total user financing for Minsky at $12.408 million and $60.315 for general or for GEO bonding. And I should note here that the Minsky GEO slash UF refers to the fact that Minsky projects are funded two-thirds with general fund-funded debt service and one-third where the system pays the state for the debt service.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Dornis.
I just wanted to add, for whatever it's worth, the project for Furtis Falls and Wadena, I know they were ranked 3 and 4 on the Minsky list, so if that helps at all. That's all I know.
So.
Okay. Chair Carlson.
And then continuing on to education.
Or Mr. Lee, sorry. Yep.
Mr. Chair, then continuing on to the Department of Education, $2 million for library construction grants and $14,070 million for the Red Lake Independent School District in GEO bonds. Moving on to state academies, asset preservation for $2 million and security corridor design for $50,000. Then on page 2, under the Department of Natural Resources, $12 million for asset preservation and a total of $3.5 million for flood hazard mitigation with three sub-items that add up to that $3.5 million, $950,000 for the general program administered by the DNR, $750,000 for Browns Valley, and $1.8 million for Ortonville. Under dam repair, reconstruction, removal, $9 million in total, with $500,000 for emergency repairs on state-owned dams, $3.6 million for the Lanesboro Dam, $2.5 million for Pelican Rapids Dam, $200,000 for Norway Lake Dam, $200,000 for Yellow Medicine County Canby Improvement Dam, $100,000 for the St. Louis County Littlestone Lake Dam, and then combined $1.4 million for state-owned dams in Brawler, Collinwood, Grindstone River, and Sullivan. And then a total of $6.19 million for state trails development with two specific projects to that total, $2.59 million for the Glacial Lakes Trail and $3.6 million for the Cuyuna State Recreation Area. And then finally, under the Department of Natural Resources, the City of Champlin has a grant political subdivision for the Mill Pond Dam at $3.3 million. For the Pollution Control Agency, there's two appropriations, one for the St. Louis River Area of Concern at $12,705,000. And then this should say the Watershed District or Joint Powers Board for restoration of Lake Redwood and the Reclamation Project at $7.8 million. Moving on to the Board of Water and Soil Resources, $6 million for reinvest in Minnesota, $1 million for the Local Road Wetlands Replacement Program. And then under the Department of Agriculture, but it's actually through the Rural Finance Authority, is $35,000 for user-financed RFA loans. These are loans that are available to farmers that are below market rates, and the method to pay these back is all user-financed, so it's not the general fund that's paying for these this $35 million authorization. Under the Minnesota Zoo, $4 million for asset preservation. Under the Department of Administration, $7 million for the Centennial Parking Ramp structural repairs. Under CAPRA, $2.5 million and $350,000 for the Capitol Complex Memorial repairs. Under MINIT, for repurposing the data facilities, $1.432 million. And then under Military Affairs for asset preservation, $2.5 million. And moving on to the Department of Public Safety, the Camp Ripley Oil Train Derailment Training Center at $3,521,000. Moving on to page 4, the Department of Transportation, there's a few different items that are rolled up into the totals in bold here. So for the local bridge replacement program, $90 million with no specific set-asides. For the local road improvement fund, that $137.2 million is the total of both the program, which is listed in the line below it at $90 million, and specific dollar amounts for specific projects, including the Appleton Town Road project at $1 million, the Hennepin County Interstate 35W and Lake Street Access Project at $25 million, the Ramsey County Interstate 694 and Rice Street Interchange, and this is the locally owned portion of that at $20,500,000. And finally, the Redwood County State Veterans Cemetery. This is not actually for the cemetery, but for paving a road that goes to the cemetery at $700,000. I will make one note on line 116, the $90 million. There is rider language for a project in Baxter for Cypress Drive, but not a dollar amount specified. Moving on to the rail grade separation and crude oil lines program, the $26,749,000 is for two projects, Anoka County, Hanson Boulevard at $11,987,000. And Red Wing Sturgeon Lake Road at $14,762,000. Then for highway rail grade crossing warning system replacement, $1 million, and $4 million for the Minnesota Valley Regional Rail Authority. Then moving on to trunk highway bonds. These are projects that are on the trunk highway system and therefore need to be paid for with either trunk highway bonds, trunk highway cash, or general fund cash. The first project is U.S. Highway 12 in Hennepin County at $15 million, then U.S. Highway 212 in Chaska for $8 million, and then a project on the trunk highway portion of the Interstate 35W and Lake Drive for $13 million, and finally the Interstate 94 and Brockton Lane interchange in Hennepin County for $34 million. And then there's one appropriation in Trunk Highway Fund cash for U.S. Highway 61 in Red Wing, and that's $833,000. The last appropriation under MnDOT is for Port Development Assistance at $5 million. I'll just make a note on the totals for MnDOT. You'll see that there's a GO total at $36.749 million. That is the ports and the rail grade programs, the general obligation transportation fund at the $227 million level. That is the total of the local road and local bridge programs. However, I should note that essentially the transportation fund, not to be confused with the trunk highway fund, is general fund debt service.
Let's see. You know, Representative Murphy and others, why don't we let Mr. Lee finish his going through the spreadsheet, and then I'll call on you. Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and members, the Metropolitan Council has three appropriations, one for $12,100,000 for the Transitway Capital Improvement Program. This would finish the Orange Line Bus Rapid Transit project in South Minneapolis running down 35W to the southern suburbs. Next, $2.5 million for the Inflow and Infiltration Grant Program, and $8,750,000 for the Mall of America Transit Station. Moving on to page 5, under the Department of Human Services, for the Minnesota Security Hospital, phase 2, $57,611,000. And then for the CABS facility in Willmar, $7,530,000. Then for the Anoka Metro Regional Treatment Center, $2,250,000. And finally, a grant to the political subdivision in Hennepin County for the regional medical examiner's facility at $2,680,000. Moving on to Veterans Affairs, $4 million for asset preservation, and Department of Corrections, $8 million for asset preservation, $19 million for the second phase of the St. Cloud intake facility, and $1.9 million for the Moose Lake master control renovation. Moving on to deed, $6 million for transportation economic development, $10 million for the business development public infrastructure program, $2 million for the innovative business development infrastructure, $21 million is a grant to the City of Duluth for the Superior Street steam and hot water conversion project, $3 million as a grant to the City of Litchfield for Phase 2 of the power generation improvements, $96,000 to the City of Medelia for public infrastructure improvements, or sorry, $98,000, and then to the City of St. James for Highway 4 and allied projects, $3,443,000. Finally, under deed, a grant to the City of St. Paul for the Science Museum, $13 million. Moving on to the Public Facilities Authority, there is a the state matching funds for US EPA capitalization grants is at $17 million, and then at $70 million is the total for the wastewater or for the water infrastructure funds, which includes two sub items, water infrastructure and drinking water infrastructure. And I don't have the splits immediately. Mr. Chair, it's $51 million for the wastewater infrastructure, $51.5 million for the wastewater infrastructure, and $18.5 million for the drinking water infrastructure. And then for the water infrastructure initiative point source implementation grants, this was the governor's rec, $46.5 million, and $5.3 million for the City of East Grand Forks sewer interconnect with Grand Forks, and in general fund cash, $11.5 million for the Lewis and Clark project. Moving on to the last page, the Minnesota Historical Society has $2.5 million for asset preservation, and then under MMB, there's two appropriation for bond sale expenses. The first is for general obligation bonds at $865,000, and the second is for the trunk highway bonding portion at $70,000. And I have the subtotals below, and I will just make a note on the bottom on line 229. You'll see $12.571 million in cancellations there. That is the result of some language that was in the governor's bill that would reduce prior bond sale authorizations dating back from the 1990s, where the projects had been completed without those without that appropriation being spent, but because of, as I understand, accounting issues with the state's computer system, those were not canceled before now, and so those are being canceled. So just stand alone, if that language was passed, there would be debt service savings that would be associated with about $12.571 million in debt service. And then three cancellations that total to $6 million relating to the 2012 flood bonding bill relating in Department of Natural Resources, PFA, and Department of Public Safety, and those amounts are going to be canceled by the end of the year.
All right, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Lee, in early discussions and with some discussions earlier in the in April, there was discussions about money for airports, and it was cash. But it was, I thought, under bonding projects. What happened to that? Are we just not doing those projects, or are those projects in the omnibus, or is because it was cash money, is it somewhere else and not part of the $800 million?
Chair Torkelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Murphy. Actually, we are under the fortunate circumstance of having a surplus in the airport fund. That surplus is adequate to cover two airport projects. Our proposal is that it cover the one in Duluth and the one in Rochester. That fund does not normally have that much of a surplus because they spend money regularly out of that fund to maintain airports all around the state. But because the fund had some money taken from it that was replaced, there's a temporary surplus. I believe at this point in time it's the intention that be carried in the transportation bill. That fund would not be required to be present here in the bonding bill. So It's every intention, I believe, to make sure that those two airports are funded, although the Senate plan, I believe, selected Duluth and International Falls instead. So there's some room for discussion there, but it's my intention to carry through with our plan, if at all possible.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. And then that explains why I can't find it in the prose. Thank you.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first of all, I wanted to ask you, Mr. Chair, whether you're going to take public testimony on the bill?
Yes, we are. We have two people that have asked to testify, and I know there's one other amendment that I have that I'd like to act on. And so I guess I wanted to recognize you, Representative Liebling, because you had your hand up, but I think we should maybe move to those other things once you're done, or we can come back to you if you want.
Yeah, no, well, thank you. That was the first thing I wanted to know, because then I will say some of my comments and let people testify. But the other piece I wanted to just follow on what Representative Carlson was saying about the lack of information that we've been given here, and I don't know if it's customary, but it seems to me that when we go through the spreadsheet, as we just did, I'm sure for anybody from the public who's watching, it's rather free of any context to just go down this list and say how much this one gets and how much this one gets. The context would be not only, you know, what requests were made, which, of course, you know, that would be hard to put in since there were so many, but at least to know what the request was on each of these projects, because there are quite a few projects on here that I understand are getting less than they asked for. And I think that that is an important context for people to know as they look at this bill, because if somebody asks for $1 million and they get 10, and, you know, just as an example, I'm not saying that is the case, of course, but that would be significant. And so I guess I would ask that maybe I could ask staff whether there are documents available that actually lay that out, not only I think what Representative Carlson asked about, to know the rankings of, say, the Minsky projects and which ones were skipped over would be important, but also to know just, you know, what was the request and then what is being allocated in this bill. Is that something that's available?
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, I do have that spreadsheet and I can send it to you.
Okay, and Mr. Chair, I think that would be, I don't know how quickly we could get that here, but I think that would be something that would be really important for committee members to have as we're considering this bill today.
You know, I think that I've got to assume that there are research people that follow the bonding committee that probably have that information from bonding committee hearings, too. That would be another potential source for you. But I guess I'll, you know, Mr. Lee, if you can, you know, make that available. I don't know that it's reasonable to say that it's going to be available with Mr. Lee up there while we're in the process of talking about the bill here for the next little bit. But I guess if you've got specific questions about it, you know, I'd say ask them and see what information you can find. Representative Carlson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, the spreadsheet that we often have shows, compares the various bills, like it would probably compare the governor's bonding bill, you know, and you'd have that on the spreadsheet, then the House bill, and probably even include the Senate, and then the other information we're requesting. I'm not sure if that's the spreadsheet that Mr. Lee would have. I had one this morning from some source, but it was a rough draft based on the best guess, I guess, of what was happening this morning when we were dealing with the budget resolution. I don't happen to have that one with me, but that one was not a complete one because we didn't know what your bill was going to have in total, at least. So what would that spreadsheet consist of if Mr. Lee could describe it to us?
Mr. Lee?
Mr. Chair and Representative Carlson, I do have a spreadsheet that tracks the total requests, the governor's recommendations, and the Senate position as it went into the floor and an amendment to that in addition to this bill. I will note that there are items in each that are exclusive of each other and some that are in some and some that aren't in others. But I do have that. I guess this spreadsheet is prepared to reflect the language in front of you.
Yeah, but Mr. Chairman, I think as people prepare to vote on the bill, perhaps here today, as Representative Liebling has pointed out, if it's possible to get that here, might be helpful, but certainly would have to have that, I would assume, on the House floor if it can't be provided today within the time frame that the meeting is taking place.
Well, Representative Carlson, I just would say, I don't think it's abnormal when a bill comes before the committee to have a spreadsheet that lays out the items that are in the bill. You know, certainly, you know, there are other spreadsheets around with other information, and I think it's always a sort of a, you know, a judgment call as to how much information you want to provide in terms of how cluttered the spreadsheet can get, how large the spreadsheet can get. I'm sure there are lots and lots of projects that weren't in either the House, the Senate, or the governor's bill
Mr.
this
Chairman,
year.
Mr. Chairman, the spreadsheet I had this morning, I wouldn't describe as cluttered.
Okay. Well, I guess I haven't seen the spreadsheet
you had
this morning.
It was on legal size, and it had the columns, and they were color-coded that showed the various bills that were in play. I think that's what Mr. Lee is describing. I don't remember where I got this. Oh, I know where I got the spreadsheet, but I don't know who had prepared the one that I had this morning. Being it was nonpartisan research, it might have been one of our staff people that requested from nonpartisan research or something. I don't know. But it did compare the different bills, but this bill was not complete on that list, but it was partial, I think, because we didn't know what the bill was going to be.
Okay. All right. Members, we've got a couple of people that wanted to testify, and I think that I think there's also one other amendment that Chair Torkelson had. Is that correct, Chair Torkelson? Was there another oral amendment?
Some language that is a potential amendment, and also, I believe, a financial oral amendment that I am still waiting for some detail on.
Oh, okay. All right. So your financially related amendment you're waiting for some detail on. Why don't I call forward, while we're waiting for the amendments, Mr. Todd Kemmerly from the Paralyzed Veterans of America. If he's here. And we can take testimony on the committee. Mr. Kemmerly, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to ask the permission to have a gentleman that also represents the Minnesota State Council of Disability to also sit next to me on that.
Sure, that would be fine. I wasn't sure if you guys were together or if you were testifying separately. So, yeah, if Mr. David Fenley from the Minnesota State Council of Disability could come forward.
I appreciate that, Chair. And thank you, representatives and Chair, for this opportunity. And what I'd like to do is we did a sort of team effort here earlier, and so I would like to defer to David here to go ahead and start this, and then maybe there'll be some follow-up.
Thank
sure.
you, Chair.
Mr. Fenley, welcome to the committee.
Chair and committee members, David Fenley from the State Council on Disability. Chair Torkelson was gracious enough to hear our concerns earlier this morning. We want to reiterate our concerns about some language that was removed from the bill. It is under the Minnesota River Valley Trail portion of the bill. It doesn't involve funding at all. What it does is it takes out some language that had solidified the legislature's commitment to having a paved trail in the Minnesota River Valley. Our concern is that the removal of this language may give the impression that the state legislature doesn't support a dual trail or a paved trail in this portion of the Minnesota River Valley, which it's our intent that this trail is accessible to all Minnesotans, including individuals such as Todd, who has a very eloquent reasoning for being here, and I'd like to defer back to him.
Thank you, David. I appreciate that. I'm in a unique position as the vice president for the Minnesota Paralyzed Veterans of America. Some of the initiatives that we would like to advocate for also translate not only just for the benefit of the disabled veterans of the state of Minnesota, but also for the disability community in whole, and that's why we're together here today. basically, we're very excited about the possibilities that are in plan and that Bloomington wishes to implement along the Minnesota River bottom. From Fort Snelling all the way down through to Bloomington Ferry, there will be an uninterrupted paved trail. What is there currently is a soft trail that is primarily used by trail bikes. Those bicycles and those people are interested in. And there is some opposition to some of this, what we would consider accessibility. We're not taking away from the experience that the off-road bicyclers are now currently enjoying, but Bloomington and their plans are to include a second trail that's paved that allows accessibility and not just for the quality of life issues that come about with that for people with mobility issues, but for the community as a whole. There's many diverse people that will be able to use this, and including the idea of being able to have an uninterrupted trail all the way from Fort Snelling. Why I keep saying Fort Snelling is that the VA hospital is very close to Fort Snelling, the trailhead that would be there. For us of us that use hand cycles and the ability to go down to the river and have our experience with that, we could leave the SCI Center, the Spinal Cord Injury Center, and use that area and go as far south as we wanted to along the river. So that's my purpose here today, is to maybe point out that in our belief that this language that has been taken out of from 37.29 to 37.32 on page 37, it leads to ambiguity to some of that could be used by the opposition to delay any sort of accessibility down there. You know, compliance is something that Bloomington City has taken into account, and they have done their studies, and we would like to be able to and to support that, and we're asking for your support on that, at maybe reconsidering and putting the language back into this so that provides the opportunity for all of us to use that portion of the trail. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Mr. Kemmerle and Mr. Fenley. All right, members, I know we have a couple of amendments. I think that we'll go ahead and start out with distributing. The first one is, as I understand it, primarily a technical amendment. If I could have a page come forward to pass out Amendment B.
If you don't want to roll call, I won't. I was asking.
Oh. You got another number, too? Well, you can probably pass it out.
I guess we've got a few amendments. We'll just all pass them out at the same time as long as we're making the rounds here.
Mr. Chair.
If it's ready, yeah.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just in relation to the previous testimony, removing the language removes the state requirement for paving. It puts the decision-making in that particular instance back in the hands of the local folks that are going to be building and utilizing that trail. We just didn't think it was appropriate that the state require that at this point, that they, in other words, Bloomington and the people that use that trail can advocate for whatever type of trail they choose to have.
Okay. Representative Wagenius, to that point.
Yes, to that point. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think Bloomington is doing the right thing, and I don't want to undermine anything they're doing. But that's a connectivity piece of trail, so lots of other people use it. And so I can, people are from my district are going to come out to yours, and people from your district are going to come in to mine using this trail, because it is a piece of connectivity. And that's why the state does have a role here. We have not had, we've had a lot of connectivity in the northern part of the state, and we're just beginning to develop that connectivity in the southern part of the state along the Minnesota River. So I would suggest that we take it out recognizing that this is not a Bloomington issue. It's a statewide issue.
Chair Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Wagenius, for those comments. I would just note that at this time, it's an unfunded mandate. They don't have the funds available to do this work at this time. That's a decision for down the road.
Representative Wagenius.
So what you are doing then is saying in the future, we just don't want to have a pay of trail. That's the message I am getting. So I am disappointed in that, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay, members, I think we should have the amendments in front of everyone. The first amendment I'd like to take up is the amendment marked B on the top, A16-1229B. Chair Torkelson moves the A16-1229B amendment. I'm told this is a technical amendment. Chair Torkelson, can you say anything else about the amendment?
I would be happy to if I had one, Mr. Chair.
Thank okay.
You. I have one now.
Otherwise, actually, maybe fiscal staff can address it. I think, like I say, it's a technical amendment that was brought forward to fiscal staff. Can I recognize Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair, this is on page 34, deleting section 27. This is language that we've used in bills in the past when there's more than one bill moving, and this says an appropriation can be given effect only once, so it fits under the budget resolution. This is the only bill moving at this point, so this section is not necessary.
Okay. Any discussion to the B amendment?
I just recommend a green vote.
Okay. Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And the question I have about this is, aren't there, so is there any cash in this bill? I'm just thinking of the Lewis and Clark project that was asked about before that. I know there's an appropriation in at least a couple of places, and I'm not sure if this applies to that.
I don't think this applies to that, Representative Liebling.
Or anything similar. Maybe Mr. Marks.
Mr. Marks?
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, the Lewis and Clark money would actually be counted twice at this point. It was counted in a jobs and economic development target, which is now in a conference committee and not all that relevant to the House necessarily. We are now counting it again in this bill.
Mr. Chair, at this point?
Yes, Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I suspect that the Republican caucus is just trying to catch up to what the Democrats have given to the Lewis and Clark over the last few years.
Well, Representative Mahoney, back when I chaired the bonding committee, I carried the bill that had the first money for Lewis and Clark.
Uh-huh. Mr. Chair, I actually went through I'm not quite as good as Lee Greenfield as for those of us who remember him. But I have old files, and I was looking through what you brought out when you were chair, and I have a comment to that later.
Oh, all right. Well, we'll wait for that. all right, any other discussion to the B amendment? Seeing, Representative Liebling.
So, Mr. Chair, just to ask Mr. Marks again. So, Mr. Marks, is this something that does harm by being here? I don't understand why, or is this like just a common provision that usually would be in the bill and it just seems superfluous? Is that the issue, or you know what usually happens with a bonding bill?
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, this is language that I guess one could say it's more to work with the budget resolution than anything else, and at this point in time it's we're past the point where it matters.
Any other discussion of the B amendment? See no discussion. All in favor of the B amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The B amendment is adopted. Let's see. Next, I think we'll take up the A amendment. Representative Torkelson moves the A16-1229A amendment. Representative Torkelson, can you explain the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This amendment will get our total at the bottom of the spreadsheet to match up with the total that was allocated or funded properly in Ways and Means earlier today so that the $800 million figure is in both. We have taken the funds that had not been expended and put them into asset preservation at the University of Minnesota and the Minscu system.
All right. Any discussion to the A amendment?
So, Mr. Chair,
Representative Carlson.
When you say the bottom line, according to the resolution this morning, then with all of these changes, that puts us at what?
At $800 million of GO. It's
exactly $800 million?
Yes.
So you're spending essentially that, the difference between, well, it was $798,805, now you're going up a little bit. Okay.
Any other discussion of the A amendment? See no discussion. All in favor of the A amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? A motion prevails. The A amendment is adopted. Okay, I'm told there's another technical amendment, the A2 amendment. Oh, all right, excuse me. Well, let's bring up the A2 amendment, which I guess needs a technical amendment. Whose amendment is the A2 amendment?
Mr. Chair.
Oh, that's Representative McNamara?
Yes. Mr. Chair, maybe I could ask staff to make that technical correction, then I'll move the amendment and explain it.
Okay, Representative McNamara moves the A2 amendment on line 1, strike 3692, insert 622, comma, the first engrossment. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That would be my motion to accept the orally modified A2. What this amendment is in a previous bonding bill, we did funded a project, and this does not affect that project, but it brought out that there's a current solid waste facility in northwestern Minnesota that exists, and we funded a publicly owned facility that will really just be duplicative. And what this amendment says is going forward that PCA will analyze the effects of the private existing facility before moving forward. And some of us, including myself, believe PCA made a mistake when they didn't properly follow section 115A.15 and 115A, believe it's 0.471, in that they were supposed to have already do that. So we reference those two sections, Mr. Chair and members, in this amendment. And so, Mr. Chair, I'm trying to save money. If you want, there's lobbyists that can come forward and explain what I just said, and I could stand for questions.
Okay, and Chair Torkelson, do you have any comments on the A2 amendment?
I would recommend adoption, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Other discussion to the A2 amendment? Representative Wiginius.
We've been given such a high level summary, I'm not sure I understand what the practical implication of this is. Is this the practical implication to stop a public facility? Is that what we're aiming for here?
Representative McNamara.
No, Mr. Chair members and Representative Wiginius, it does not have any implications for any existing facility. That it's prospective, looking forward. It just asks that we take into consideration if there's an existing private facility before we build a public facility, what are the implications? It's just, I guess I'm using the term, it's mostly feel good, but I think it does get the commissioner, I take that back, it's more than that. It gets the commissioner to follow law and to look at, we should address. I do believe that we will build a facility in northwestern Minnesota that's duplicative of an existing facility, and I think if this law would have been in place, we would have saved the state some money.
Representative Wiginius.
Okay, so I'm beginning to understand that a community has proposed a public facility. Can you tell us what community that is?
Yes, it was in the, you know, Mr. Chair, I better...
Representative McNamara.
If I'm not mistaken, was in Polk County. It's in far northwestern Minnesota. It's, it might be right on the edge of Bemidji, but I don't want to misspeak. It was a combination of Polk, maybe Beltrami, and another county. One, it's it includes a transfer station and a front-end RDF facility that was... done. And it's not about, the bill isn't about that facility, but that facility served as an example. I did not even know there was an existing transfer station. The original proposal was to build a second transfer station in the same industrial park where there's already a transfer station. So you can imagine a community, I believe it was on the west edge of Bemidji, will have two transfer stations in the same industrial park. Now, coincidentally, they're moving the transfer station to a different location just a few miles away for whatever reason. But that's the gist of it. Representative Guineas, I don't know if now you remember the project, and I just believe it wasn't a good use of state money. And if at least they would have followed this process, we know they would have taken into account. I don't know it, but maybe there was other local politics or local decisions being involved, and this would have brought out a more fair process, and Commissioner Stein would have had a little better direction. I had a lot of discussion with Commissioner Stein. He felt his hands were tied and he needed to move forward with the project, and I think this would help our agency do a better job.
Representative Guineas.
Well, thank you. I'm beginning to understand this, and I trust everybody else is understanding it better than I do. But it does seem like we're saying competition isn't good, and we just want to preserve the one facility that is there, and that troubles me. So, thank you.
Representative Liebling to this point.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think what we're doing here now, it seems, and please somebody correct me if I'm wrong, or Representative McNamara, correct me, but here we have a piece of policy that's not directly related to anything that's in the bonding bill, and instead of it going through a committee and having testimony from the agency and from the whoever's, Representative McNamara said there are lobbyists in the room, you know, who are interested in this. So now we have this piece of policy that probably belongs in a different committee being moved here as part of the bonding bill. And I don't feel like I'm in a good position to vote on this. I don't think this should be here, Representative Knobloch. I mean, I know you're not bringing it, but I don't think that this is the appropriate place for it. I guess I'd like to know why this couldn't have been moved or can't be moved in a bill next session. I don't know how urgent this is. I don't know what the department would have to say about it, and I actually wonder why we would spend the time with this at this particular time. It just doesn't seem to be the right time for this to be moved.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And any time I start to see that the government is saying you have to do a private entity before you do a public entity starts to concern me about this body's interest in, you know, actually privatizing many government services. And so I really recommend that this go through a policy provision, because I think if you add this provision in and you're talking about assessing public versus private, it certainly makes this bill open to a larger, broader discussion about whether or not we should have public versus private facilities all across this state on particular issues. Mm-hmm. So I can debate all day.
Nope. Any other discussion to the A2 amendment? See no further discussion. All in favor of the A2 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. The A2 amendment is adopted.
Division
being called. All in favor of the A2 amendment, raise their hands. Okay, those opposed, raise their hands. All right, seeing 14 ayes and 9 nays, the motion prevails and the A2 amendment is adopted, including the individuals on each side that had two hands up.
I used to do that when Representative Abrams was in the speaker's chair, and one day he said, Representative Carlson, you can only be counted once.
All right. Let me ask, are there any other amendments that people have for the bill? because I believe all the amendments I'm aware of. All right. Seeing no further amendments, I'm going to recognize Mr. Mahoney, Representative Mahoney, who's been waiting for a while, I think, to speak on the bill. Representative Mahoney.
I think it's 14-4 and 9 against the rule, or 10 against, and I'll just put it and move on. We're going to be done here soon.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually, given that we just talked about a previous private facility, I think it's only a good question for me to ask. Tell me about line 1.17 in the spreadsheet, this Appleton Township Road. Does that relate to the private prison in Appleton, or is this related to another facility?
Chair Torkelson.
Thank you. This is a road project in Appleton that I believe is not related to the prison in any, I mean, it's in the same neighborhood, but it's not related to the prison.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Torkelson, I brought up an issue in capital investment that I think needs to be visited here, too, and that is the asset preservation issue. Folks have been asking to see a comparison of what was asked for and what is actually in this bill, but for asset preservation, the original number from the agencies and DV U of M and MNSCU was $407 million. This bill funds just a tad over $100 million, less than a quarter of the total request. What is going on here is that now we have an additional $300 million plus dollars of debt that we will now be carrying on the state's books. If you don't want to spend money right now to pay for these assets, to preserve these assets, now we're carrying this as a debt, a $300 million debt. Just because we're carrying it over here as a debt does not mean that these assets are not continuing to crumble. They are. They're there, and they're continuing to crumble. So we need to be honest about the ledger we're presenting with this bill. We're funding a little less than a quarter of the asset preservation, and we're not doing three quarters of it. Now, when we were in the Capital Investment Committee, Chair Torkelson said something like, I don't think bonding bills should meet all the needs. And that's fine. The other option is general fund money. And we have general fund money that could meet the needs. But it is my understanding that we're not going to be doing that. Now, if I'm wrong, you can tell me because you're doing the general fund appropriations, but if it's not in bonding and it's not in general fund, it means it's not being done. And so this proposal is proposing that the state can add debt, and I think that's just wrong at this time. We're not in a squeeze position in terms of finances. We should be taking care of our assets. We talk about it, but this bill doesn't do it.
Representative Liebling, and then I understand there's one other technical amendment to come up. Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And kind of following along on what Representative Wagenius just had, there is one section of the bill that's actually creating immediate cost to the state, and that is the Human Services section of the bill. And Mr. Chair, we have someone here from the Department of Human Services who could come up and talk about what's going on in the bill in terms of what was requested and what is being provided here, and I wonder if we could do that, please.
Sure.
So, Chuck Johnson from the Department of Human Services.
Mr. Johnson, welcome to the Committee on Ways and Means. And Representative Liebling, do you have a question for Mr. Johnson?
Well, I think he might be prepared to just explain to us his perspective on this, but I could just get started by just asking Mr. Johnson if he would kind of explain the impact of the unfunded what is funded and what is unfunded in the bill in terms of what the department is requesting.
All right, Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, thank you. I'm Chuck Johnson. I serve as Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Human Services. I want to acknowledge that the bill does provide substantial funding for the Minnesota Security Hospital, the second phase of the work that's being done there, and we appreciate the recognition of the importance of that project. However, request for the Security Hospital does leave out a piece of the request for Phase 2, which is a transition building for transitional services. This is essentially a building for patients who are toward the end of their treatment and are working on transition back to the community. As folks are aware, we are working on the first phase of the project. The first phase included one of those transitional buildings with 48 beds. The second phase would include a second building with 48 beds. The two phases of the project require us to do a lot of work in terms of shifting patients around while we're building. These are people that are committed to us as mentally ill and dangerous people who need a high level of care in a very secure environment. And so the project is already challenging. As Representative Torkelson has suggested, delaying the transition building to a third phase actually then extends the period of time that we have to continue to maintain some of our patients on the lower campus at St. Peter. What that means is that for an additional year or 2 years, or however long it takes to get the building built, we will have to transport patients from where they will be living on the lower campus in an aging building up to the upper campus, because after we do the first phase of construction opens in the fall of this year, we'll have all of our activities for our patients up on top of the hill in St. Peter for recreation, for therapeutic activities, or group activities, and we'll have to be transporting patients back and forth. That will add a couple of FTEs of cost by our estimate in order to maintain that, as well as potentially additional staffing for the building where they live on the lower campus now. We're also concerned about how that impacts just the therapeutic and treatment environment for those individuals. We really are working with the St. Peter Project over the two phases to develop a facility that provides care for patients all the way from the time they come to us when they're often in crisis, have serious needs, need to be stabilized, to the point of transition where they're ready to move back into the community. And we're concerned that this delaying this transition building would potentially impact that. And so those are our concerns with related to the Security Hospital and the exclusion of the transitional building as part of Phase 2. We also have a request that was not funded for the Minnesota Sex Offender Program also on the St. Peter campus. I think many of the folks on the Capital Investment Committee certainly visited and saw the facilities there. This relates to what's called community preparation services. So similar to the Security Hospital, it's for the clients we serve in the Sex Offender Program who are close to the end of their treatment. The men that go into this part of the program are court-ordered to that part of the program. When I say court-ordered, I'm not talking about the federal lawsuit that's in appeal and we're not sure what's going to happen. I'm talking about state district court judges who are on a daily basis ordering us to move people to community preparation services. Those services exist on the St. Peter campus only, and they're essentially outside of the razor wire. This is, again, to prepare people to move back to the community. Our concern with this is particularly that we already have about 16 of our clients on a waiting list to get into community preparation services. We've seen a real increase in the number of people that are being court-ordered to CPS in St. Peter, and we're not able to keep up with it from a bed perspective. Through Phase 1 that was funded in 2014, 11 of the 30 beds coming online this fall, we're going to fill those beds immediately. The proposal that was in Phase 2 that is not funded in this bill would have provided an additional 30 beds that would have helped us in the long run to be able to meet that need going forward. And our concern is this isn't a program that actually is anticipated to have a waiting list. So what legal risk we're taking by continuing to not move people to the level of care that they have been court ordered to is a legal risk that we're continuing to carry. And we need to keep making progress on the the community preparation services. And then finally, Mr. Chair, I just want to point out that we did have asset preservation for the Department of Human Services, about $1.5 million we had asked for, which is not funded. That is part of about a $21 million backlog of asset preservation that we have across our facilities, major facilities in St. Peter, Moose Lake, and Anoka, as well as 200 some other facilities scattered across the state. And then lastly, the early childhood bonding. This is a program that's been ongoing over a number of bonding cycles that we provided funding to. Provides funding to communities that are looking for space for early childhood programming. We know there's tremendous pressure there. We put out essentially an RFI earlier this year to communities to ask them if they had shovel-ready projects. They're ready to meet the 50% match, which is required in law. And we got back a list of over 20 million projects that people were ready to move on. The governor requested 15 million in general obligation bonds and 5 million in general fund to also allow nonprofit organizations to access those funds. So those are our concerns with the pieces that have been not included in this bill.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Johnson. I had mentioned there was another amendment. Representative Hackbarth, I believe you said you had a technical amendment that needed to be offered, so I'll recognize Representative Hackbarth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If Ms. Newman would report the amendment, she has it in writing, so we'll get it correct.
All right, Ms. Newman.
Mr. Chair and members, the amendment is on page 20, line 19. Delete I-35W and insert I-35. And on page 20, line 26, delete 35W, comma, and insert 35, comma.
All right. Representative Hackbarth moves that oral technical amendment. Any discussion to the Hackbarth amendment? Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the Hackbarth amendment, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The Hackbarth amendment is adopted. All right, members. Other discussion to the bill. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I sat in on at least a significant part of capital investment this morning, and at least while I was there, and I did ask one of the staff people if Minsky or the U of M had testified, and I was told they had not. Maybe if Representative Torkelson could add, did the U of M or Minsky have an opportunity to testify before your committee this morning?
Chair Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Carlson. We brought forward all testifiers who requested to testify. They did not make a request.
They did not make a request?
That is correct.
I'm a little bit surprised at that, considering that much of their request isn't in the bill. Maybe, Mr. Chairman, I can put it this way. Is there anybody from Minsky that would care to testify very briefly here today or this afternoon, or the U of M? I think they're usually a major part of the bonding bill, those two systems together. And if they don't want to testify, I guess I'm not going to try to somehow force them to, but I do want to have that opportunity presented if they choose to make a few comments.
Well, Representative Carlson, I guess I think that, you know, under the rules we're required to take testimony. We have taken some testimony today. I know that the bonding committee has traveled extensively across the state for 3 weeks of time over the last year. I know that Chair Torkelson has had numerous committee hearings in the bonding committee where the University of Minnesota, the Minsky system, and there were a lot of other people have had an opportunity to talk about their requests and make their case. And we were, I believe, supposed to be in session a bit ago now, and I guess I just don't know that we are in a situation where we should be bringing up additional people to testify.
Mr. Chairman, the reason I raised that question is
I'm sorry, I'm just told session is at 3 now.
Okay, the reason I raised that question is that I do have some concerns about the bill. From my perspective, the crucial vote was this morning when we attempted to give you an opportunity to have a larger bill to address a lot of the issues that are obviously apparent here. And I'm assuming if they had the opportunity this morning, then that they chose not to to testify. If that's the case, as I said earlier, I'm not interested in trying to force them to testify. I wanted to make sure that they had that opportunity if they chose. And I see at least Minsky is here. I don't know if the U of M is here. If maybe they could give a yes or no if they'd like to comment. And one of the reasons that I would be interested, let's look at Minsky. I've got no problem, at least at the face of it, with what's happening with Minsky. But you know what? We've got some colleges and universities in the metropolitan area, and we have some colleges and universities in the regional centers outside of St. Cloud, and none of them are represented here. It's all you have to do is look at the spreadsheet, and that's why I was interested if either of the systems wanted to comment. But after the Heaper amount, you go down, it's Fergus Falls, Wadena, Grand Forks, Albert Lea, North Mankato, St. Cloud State University. And a follow-up question that I had then was, what is the distribution? And you have some metropolitan area legislators on your side of the table. And I assume that they must have some interest in advocating for their region of the state. And like I say, I'm not arguing against anything that's on the list. I assume that those are valid requests. I was told that one or two of the projects on the list were numbers 2 and 3 on the request list. So I just want to make it clear, I'm not advocating or arguing against those. I'm just saying that there seems to be a huge hole in this bill, at least when I'm looking at the very first page dealing with higher education. And I'm assuming that other state universities outside of St. Cloud had requests. And I don't want to try to embarrass you, Mr. Chairman, by asking you what the ranking was. It may have been number one for all I know, but you know, there are other state universities. Without listing them all, we know that there's a total of 7 of them, and I assume that they had some requests for some projects as well. And the U of M, there's the Duluth project. I've got no problem with the Duluth project, but there again, the University of Minnesota has several campuses, and only one of them is represented in the bill. We could go through several parts of the bill, and the same issue emerges, the regional centers and the metropolitan area. Mr. Chairman, I think this bill is in big trouble when it hits the House floor. I don't know how many of your people are going to be willing to support a $947 million bill, which is the grand total, and then the GO part of it now with the amendment is at $800 million. But there certainly is a huge hole here when we look at it regionally. And I don't know if anybody on your side of the aisle that would represent a regional center or the 7-county metropolitan area would care to comment. But I certainly am very concerned about the distribution. And, you know, back when we had the Appropriations Committee, prior to having the Capital Investment Committee, I always very carefully looked at the distribution of the projects around the state. And I remember a conversation that I had with the university at one point, and they said they raised a question because I had Morris on the list. And I said that there was a huge hole in that region of the state. It was on the university list. And so I wasn't being exclusive, I was being inclusive, and I said we put Morris on the list because I felt that that region of the state deserved some input and some benefits from the distribution and the projects that were being distributed. And I know that under Representative Houseman, when she has chaired the Capital Investment Committee, she has also tried to be very fair in terms of the distribution of the projects. And that's in addition to the overall amount, that's something that's totally lacking in this particular bill. So I don't know if other members of the committee have comments, but I'll leave it at that point from my perspective and encourage a no vote.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Torkelson, first of all, thank you for all the work you put in this bill. It's greatly appreciated for the long work that you and staff members put in. One of two things is going to happen for the remainder of this session. Option one is that we go to the floor, this bill passes, and then it's negotiated in conference committee for a final agreement. Option two is that it goes to the floor, the DFL stops it from going forward, and then you'll negotiate with the Senate and you'll get a version two of the bill, and that'll pass off the House floor. And I know if we go the version two route, what happens is certainly there's a reprioritization of projects that take place. Certainly the overall spending amount may go up, but then also versions or items that were in the bill in the first version are removed for the bill and replaced with other items. And I just want to commit to you, Mr. To Chairman Torkelson, that if the DFL chooses version two, I got a list up in my office I'd like to share with you. And I think there's some priorities that can easily be removed and funded with much better projects of regional and statewide significance that would gain even more support in the DFL than the ones that are in this bill and are going to have more statewide support. So if they choose option two, please let's make sure we spend some time together. Happy to share with you that list. Thank you.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Torkelson, that I know how difficult it is to put together a bonding bill that's the right size and the right shape, and it's very trying to balance all of the many competing interests and all of the dollar amounts. And Representative Carlson, as somebody from the metro area with some projects that were and are very important to my area that are not in the bill, we're always disappointed when we don't see that, but you have to understand that this has to be a balanced bill. And this bill is a bill that does not have a lot of shiny new buildings in it. And when you do that, and when you build a shiny new building, you fill them with employees and lots of new things, and you create another building that needs to be repaired. And with that comes asset preservation. When you build a new building, you take on all the future maintenance of that building. And this particular bill is really focused more than any other bill I think I've seen, and is a comprehensive capital investment bill on things that are not pretty, things that don't need paint, things like concrete and steel and bituminous and lots of stuff like that that you don't have ribbon cuttings for, but we really need. We need a lot of these asset preservation projects. And just looking at the asset preservation line, Representative Wagenius, not only does this bill have stuff that doesn't need future painting and redecorating, but it also has exactly the same percentage of HEPR as the bill that passed off of the floor 2 years ago under Democrat leadership. So this is intensive on infrastructure, on ugly stuff that doesn't need paint and redecorating, and it's a thing that we probably should be doing more of. So I really want to commend Representative Torkelson for saying no a lot. It's not always fun, but also to do some of the things that we've been putting off in the state. So I think it's a very good balanced bill, but also one that is focused, and it makes me happy to see an emphasis on transportation and also on infrastructure in HEPR.
Representative Mahoney, then Erdahl. Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And when I made my reference to Representative Greenfield a while back, I was making the reference to keeping a file from when you were chair of the bonding committee, and it seems like a different lifetime.
It sure does.
Well, you know, my little girl was in just into high school, and now in a few months she's getting married, and you know, it's a whole different world. Because you brought forth lists of projects in legislative districts, and you matched them up. You brought forth a list of metro versus greater Minnesota dollars, and you kind of evened them out. You brought forth many different lists, and this particular presentation doesn't have that, and it's hard to kind of determine. But going through this bill, it's pretty obvious that it's a very partisan bill, and lopsided partisanship at that. So the idea that Democrats might have some concerns with this particular bill is one thing. But for a member that is elected by their constituents to threats on the record of retaliation is pretty much a cheap shot. And don't tell me I will bring up the name of the cheap shot artist. And worse to that, is that it's very childish. Most of us here have been around either long enough or gone to enough school that we can use our words better than to fall to cheap tricks. I don't like this bill. I haven't said anything publicly. I've tried to be somewhat kind and respectful. I don't disagree that Representative Torkelson may have done a ton of work on this and staff might have done a ton of work on this. I don't agree with the work. I don't appreciate the work, but I don't disagree that you did work on it and you put an effort to it. I think the bill does not work. Does not work for the state, does not work for bipartisanship, and that's the problem. And if it comes to the House floor and the Democrats vote against it, there's not enough in this bill for Democrats to vote for this particular bill. I think you need 8. I don't know where you get your 8. So don't come blaming us. The blame if this thing fails is on the GOP, on the Republicans not putting together a bipartisan bill that includes and takes into consideration the needs of the whole state, not just making sure that they can bring something home to their members, the GOP members' districts, so that they can maintain a control over Minnesota House of Representatives. And I think to make cheap shots and threats is childish, and I'll say that again. We need to step this up. And I'll be voting no on this bill.
Representative Erdahl.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I would respectfully disagree with my friend, Representative Mahoney. I feel that this bill has the interests of the state of Minnesota at heart. It has a broad spectrum. It's very heavy on infrastructure. And just to focus on one part of it, and that's the infrastructure funding dealing with PFA. Very important for all of Minnesota, particularly greater Minnesota, where this is how our wastewater plants are funded, how our water towers are put up. And PFA doesn't know partisan, doesn't know parties. The PFA system is developed by a point system that they have, and that determines who gets the funding. And in this case, when I obviously, the more money you put into PFA, then the more they can do. And this bill has about twice as much money for PFA as we've ever done before.
Oh, that's not true.
At least in my memory here, 14 years. And so this is very important. And the governor also has a high PFA recommendation. And so it is, in that respect, very nonpartisan. And I recommend passage of the bill.
Representative Dornis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm only speaking for myself, but I don't know what DFL projects are not included in here that have been requested. I was just going through here and just making a list of, you got the Science Museum, that's the St. Paul project, Hennepin County.
Statewide project.
Medical, the Hennepin County Medical Examiner's Facility. You've got the Mall of America Transit Station. Met Council has $23 million. Highway 12, Highway 212, Highway 35, Interstate 94, and an exchange. That's, you know, there's a lot of projects. Hennepin County, another project for highways. Rail project for Anoka County. And there's a lot of projects in here that are for the Twin Cities. I don't know what is missing, what you're looking for. That's all, Chair.
Representative Carlson, then Liebling.
Mr. Chairman, in response to some of the or one of the earlier comments that referenced where the bill may ultimately be written, I would just remind members of the committee, if you follow the rules, it has to be a project that's passed one body or the other. And so when you come in with a grossly underfunded bill, you're putting the House at a disadvantage when you begin to bargain. And you'll have to, if you follow the rules, you'll have to work off the Senate list. And in reference to DFL Republican, I don't think I ever referenced DFL Republican. I referenced regions, the metropolitan region, and the regional centers in greater Minnesota. in spite of the few projects that were just mentioned in the area of mainly, I think, transportation. I was referencing, and I was reading off the list with the Minsky system in particular, and could have done the same thing with the University of Minnesota. If you recall, my opening comments were that we do have colleges and universities in the metropolitan area and in some of the other regional centers, and I still stand by that, that there's a lack of fairness in this bill in terms of, especially in the area of higher education, but we could point to other parts of the bill as well. But last time I spoke, I said I was done speaking, but I did want to point out that if you follow the rules, you'll be working off the Senate list then. And I would hope that you do follow the rules.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I wasn't going to speak again because I think I gave my opinion of this bill this morning when we came in. And I feel no less grumpy now than I did this morning, having learned more about the bill. And, you know, I just want to respond to Representative Nornes. Representative Nornes, you're the chair of the Higher Education Committee. I would think that you would kind of be a bit more cognizant of this, but even just, first of all, let me reiterate, Rochester got nothing in this bill, nothing. We are the third largest city. We really had very modest requests this year, and one of them is on that Minsky list, and we got skipped over. So our request, I don't know exactly what number it is, but I can sure tell you for sure, 100% sure, it came before St. Cloud State University's request that is on here. So I view this bill as one that pits areas of the state against each other. A bonding bill, because it requires a supermajority, should bring the state together. It should bring us all together to say, let's build up our state. And we could agree, you know, on some guiding principles that we're going to try to stay away from new shiny things or whatever. But to have the bill pick winners and losers the way it does among our areas of the state, I think is really indefensible. And there are plenty of times I voted for projects that I, you know, weren't necessarily something that I was close to or even knew that much about, because it's a statewide prospect, a bonding bill. This is one bill where people need to come together to do what's best for the whole state. And this bill fails miserably on that measure.
Chair Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for your input. I do appreciate it. We've done our best to assemble a bill that does have statewide impact and does meet some of the most current and critical needs around the state of Minnesota, including those in every area of the state. Mr. Chair, I don't have any further remarks, but I would like to renew my motion, and I do have some detail on the motion that I need to include.
All right. Well, thank you on my behalf also for all your work and your staff's work on this important bill, Chair Torkelson. Chair Torkelson.
Thank you. I move to pass the bill as amended and include direction that totals and bond sale authorization be adjusted accordingly. I renew my motion, Mr. Chair.
See no further discussion. All in favor of the Torkelson motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. House 622, as amended, is referred to the General Register with instructions to staff to adjust the totals according to the amendments. Hearing a majority vote, the motion prevails. Members, seeing no further business at the moment, we are adjourned.